Welcome back. You're watching StockWatch with me, Bright Kumalo. Tackling your stock-related questions this evening are Devin Shute from the Robey Group and Trikas Kombrink from Capicraft. Send those questions via SMS to 41392, email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag StockWatch. Gentlemen, welcome to the show. I mean, interesting couple of days this week after having a rather interesting month of July in terms of returns. I mean, nice bounce back in global markets, especially in the US and the sort of risk-on growth type stocks. But I mean, the last 2 days have been just mainly political news. I mean, I'll start with you, Trikas. Nancy Pelosi flying to Taiwan, sending markets, you know, in the red, and obviously she's traveling apparently with 40 other people, and she arrives fine and markets start turning green, except for our markets because they were closed by that time. What's going on, Trikas?
Well, if Aunt Nancy, if she hasn't got a put on based in some beneficial account based in the Caymans, it's not working really for the markets.
Yeah, it's not working.
No, hopefully this is a bit of a storm in a teacup and it'll blow over. From a personal point of view, you know, and as a Westerner, it's difficult to see how this infringes upon the sovereign rights of the Chinese, bigger Chinese nation. But they feel otherwise, and I think that should be respected. And I think this current administration is either very arrogant or very naive when it comes to geopolitics, you know, in general. So I think we're still in for another 2.5 years of volatile geopolitics.
Yeah, it's like basically going into someone's house, you know, unannounced and obviously unwelcome. And you know that they've got a long track record of being aggressive and being locked up and coming in and out of jail. And you still go there anyways. I wonder what you're trying to see on the other side, right? Devin, it's been a while. It's slap bang in the middle of earnings season as well. I mean, we saw some updates from the likes of, you know, MTN locally. I think the word they used was, I don't know, banger of earnings they expect to come out this week. Tonight, I think after market, we'll see things like AMD, Starbucks, PayPal, Airbnb, the likes. I mean, some of the other ones have reported before market opens. So what do you have your eyes on?
So look, an interesting one that I saw come out today, Bright, was Caterpillar.
Yes.
So that's really a very, very industrial facing company. They look pretty decent, right? In line on revenue and a beat on the earnings level. So they're starting to see economic activity come back. I mean, I guess those order lead times are very long for machinery like that. You've got to couple that against the technical recession that the US is already in and at the moment. But you know, markets did show some life, as you said last month. Whether it was a bear market rally or you know start of things to come, I think it's too early to say. It's still going to be the same story that you know many of us have spoken about before, is watching that headline inflation number come out of the US and then guessing what the central banks are going to do as a result. But This earnings season, going back to your question, has been quite interesting because some of the big tech names, you know, haven't disappointed as much as some people are predicting. We've still got a way to go, but my sense is that the forecast for US earnings particularly are probably a bit high, and that still needs to be reflected in markets.
Okay, I respect that stance. I mean, talking about technology companies releasing earnings, before we go to our questions, let's talk about Uber for a second here, Trikas. I know you're not very bullish on Uber for obvious reasons, but I mean, we're seeing a nice recovery in the share price. They're up 17%. They released earnings again, Devin, like you said, not as bad as expected. So these days, that's what you go with. You'll take it if you can. I mean, the food business seeming to be doing okay. You know, the cars, the ride hailing business, you know, clawing its way back into the economy. Even though, I mean, we're talking about things like recessions, but there's demand for these cars now because people are going back, you know, to the office. Well, they're kind of forced to go back to the office.
Yeah, I think there's a few things playing in their favor, and I think they're executing a bit better than the market has given them, you know.
Credit for.
Yeah, so it's still, you know, there's still not a clear path to sustain profitability for the company. So that's
very
true.
I think
it's obvious, and it's come down a lot. So I think this is a bit of a relief rally, and you know, bull thesis is they die hard. And it took a long time, you know, in the IT bubbles 20 years ago for stories or narratives like these to die down. But I do think there will be winners. Is Uber one of them? I really don't know. Maybe I'm not clever enough. That's why I'm staying away from the likes of a Uber or a Tesla, or, you know, that it's just too difficult to look too far into the future here. A lot of unknowns, and it's in a too hard pile for me, Bright.
Yeah, I mean, don't ever doubt your gut feel here. I mean, 40% of these private technology businesses are what we call unicorns or decacorns, whatever you want to call them. Most of their valuation have been slashed by 40% in private markets. I mean, what we're seeing in public markets is happening also out there. You look at the likes of SoftBank, you look at their share price, obviously will sort of play as a proxy of their underlying assets that they own of over $100 billion. That's worth way less than, you know, what they thought it would be, and they're doing all those write-downs, definitely not with a smile in their faces, and that shows us, you know, where we are in terms of technology valuations today, and there hasn't been really a recovery or a bounce back, so things are still dire that side. Devin, Uber, anything to add?
Look, I mean, I think the future isn't clear, and the point Rick has made about the sustainable profitability is a key one to watch. I think markets are focusing much closer on the financial metrics of these companies. I mean, you mentioned the private markets, right? The private equity guys last year were only interested in kind of vision and what these tech companies could do, whereas now what you're seeing, it's much more on the financial metrics, sustainability of it in that regard.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm cautious. I think there's no need to rush in yet. You know, if inflation is more systemic than, you know, the market is pricing at the moment, I think these growth stocks could come under pressure for a while to come.
Okay.
Yeah. Brad, just to add one thing, I don't think Uber would have been up 16-17% if Jay Powell didn't give us a good excuse to chase stocks like this high again.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, the backdrop of the market is obviously also a great, you know, tailwind for earnings beat.
Yeah, I mean, the change in tone from the Fed in general is, pushing those growth stocks higher. And, yeah, I mean, we'll take it at this level. We have a question here on Twitter from Eden, who says, good day, which is a better investment between Anglo American PLC, which is, you know, the share price AGL, and Anglo American Platinum, AMPLATS, and why, I guess that's the question, what is the difference between the two companies? Trikas?
Yeah, well, the big difference is AMPLATS is obviously a PGM player, and Anglo is more diversified. Anglo just unbundled its coal recently, big mistake, in retrospect. But, you know, it's very iron ore heavy. Relative to BHP, it's better diversified in my opinion. It's got more stuff like copper, more base metals, and obviously the platinum and some precious metals, etc. Yeah, stuff like diamonds, etc. So I think it's a good diversified miner. It's much cheaper than it was a few months ago, so it's not a bad entry point if you've got a long-term commodity bull view. I do think AMPLATS offers more value at these levels. I do not like the diversified miners because all of them are the heavy iron ore. There's no supply problems with iron ore, you know, like you've got in copper or in some you know, in PGM space or in energy. There's no supply problems. And secondly, from a demand perspective, the Chinese will start recycling some of their old automobile stock. They will start recycling some of their, you know, if you see videos of Chinese breaking down towers, you know, office blocks, etc., condominiums, yes. all those rebar, that gets recycled. So they'll go into a recycling cycle within the next decade or so. And then, you know, they're not building all these skyscrapers anymore that supported the iron ore price, or bridges to nowhere that supported the iron ore price in the early parts of the previous decade. So I'm not sure I'm much of a bull on iron ore. I love a lot of other commodity, you know, subsectors, etc. And that's why I'd rather go with Amplats than with Anglo American.
Yeah, interesting. I missed, you know, the roaring 2000s because I was busy on my bike, you know. Should have been looking at markets. Devin, your thoughts between the two and which one do you like?
Look, I mean, I generally will favor a diversified miner. I think it's so difficult to call a single commodity producer where it is in its cycle. So, you know, a favorite. If you had to go there, I'm saying Anglo-American. Drick has mentioned BHP, which we think has got a really good portfolio of assets.
Yep.
Or the other one to look at is Glencore, which actually held on to their coal assets and has done incredibly well there. I think if you're looking at the commodity space, Bright, I'm pretty positive kind of medium term on it. I think, you know, the prices did get ahead of themselves, but I think there is very limited supply coming on for precious as well as these in industrial and base metals. And I think as a result, there is an underpin to them. These operations of these miners are leaner and meaner than they've ever been. They're returning cash to shareholders through dividends, buybacks, you name it. And they're reluctant to spend again on big capex problems. So I think structurally, we've got supply deficits in many of these metals for some time to come. So I think, you know, on any share price weakness, you can look at the high quality names.
We have a question here about Massmart. I think this is always an obvious one. The viewer here is asking, when will this one recover? Trickers?
Yeah.
Retailers not in South
well.
Africa, yeah.
I think there was a flickering of hope during, COVID, when people, you know, sat at home and they invested, you know, back into their home-based lifestyles, you know, work from home, etc. Meant you did more of your, you know, more of your durable purchases was for the home, and you went to macro and the likes, but they are struggling, you know, from just a quick glance from today's trading statement would tell you that market thinks so as well, minus 6%. I'm not sure where to from here for management, to be quite honest. Should they close more stores? Obviously, is it a buyer? I'm not sure that.
Yeah, look, and if, I mean, you look at other, you know, sort of similar or comparable retailers in South Africa, like, you know, Pick and Pay, ShopRite, maybe even Woolies Foods or whatever. Which one would be your pick in the retail space for the long term?
Well, I think Spar looks like it's there's a bit of value there.
Yep.
I think it's sitting at a 10 price earnings ratio, but they've got a lot of issues. You know, they are investing into Poland. And I think a few million, migrants might do them well, but at the moment, you know, the whole European, you know, you've got PPIs of 30, you know, producer inflation of 30% in that part of Europe, while they're struggling to put that through to consumers, you know, CPI is still below 10%. So I think there's a lot of margin pressure. It will take a long time for that part of the business to get through. But I think if you've got time, I think Spar looks interesting here. And then, you know, the cheapest retailer, I think, in the JSE is Co-op Agri. Co-op Agri is not a co-op really anymore. It's basically transitioning to what I think is a retailer, and it's sitting at about a 7 price earnings, maybe even less looking forward. And there's management is adding a bit of value here, there, bolt-on acquisitions, maybe buying back a bit of shares here and there. Yeah. I think that's an interesting one to watch.
Okay, so you gave us two, Spar and Co-op Agri, to, you know, take a deep dive after the show. You, Devin, I mean, Massmart, you know, still has its own issues, and I mean, I don't know if they put C in competition, but it's tough here.
Yeah, it's a really difficult space. They haven't got that formula right with game specifically has really been the noose around their neck. And I'm not sure the way the business model stands that it will ever be massively profitable, even if they get the efficiencies right. They are trying moving heavily into alcohol now. That may be something in terms of a pivot. I'm not too sure. In terms of your question, you know, where else would I be looking in terms of SA retailers in the food space? I mean, ShopRite is an obvious one. You've got to be very cautious what you pay for it. But anyone is able to grow their margins in this environment in food, which is a razor-thin margin business, is proof of those operational efficiencies happening. They're moving up and down the kind of value chain in terms of the type of consumers they're targeting. So fantastic quality business. And then, yeah, if we look to maybe something in the clothing sector, Truworths, you know, just yeah. is a consistent performer, excellently managed business, you know, fantastic portfolio of brands. So, yeah, I think we're spoiled in South Africa with really high quality retailers, and unfortunately, something like Massmart stands out maybe just not as high quality.
Yeah, you will be embarrassed and, you know, exposed in this type of very competitive market with finite rands, you know, going into those retailers here in South Africa. Let's move on. We have a question here from John Koenig, who says, hello, Bright. I see that many car brands, such as Porsche, are investing huge amounts into sustainable fuels, and I feel that there will be a huge growth in the future and mass production of it. Which stocks can we buy to get into the sustainable fuel game? I mean, I think we had a preamble to this, Drikus, just, you know, to sort of discuss what is he talking about when he says sustainable fuel. Is he talking biofuels or a more efficient fuel source, so still an oil-based fuel, you know, like octane? I don't know. What do you think he's talking about here?
Yeah, so I think one of two things maybe. One is biofuels. Biofuels, obviously, it's not the best idea. No, biofuels exist because of subsidies and because it's used as an anti-knock agent within normal fuels. You know, it's mixed in. I think 1/10 of, you know, typically what you'll find in Western markets. It's mixed into the normal fuels, and it's an anti-knocking agent, and it's subsidized basically. So I'm not sure it's sustainable. Maybe it means hydrogen power. Maybe Porsche is investing into hydrogen. That's possible. Yep. Still need a lot of, you know, still a lot of research to do before we get there. And obviously, how do you produce hydrogen? You need an energy source to produce hydrogen, exactly. Unfortunately. So at the moment, we produce hydrogen by using natural gas. So it's not that sustainable at the end of the day, unless we get other ways to produce it.
Well, even biofuel is not that sustainable. I mean, we were talking about the ratio of plants you have to kill in terms of hectares and the liters you get on the other side. It's just you can't mass produce biofuels. Like it's very tough. Let's say you did want to play the biofuel game, Atricus. What are the stocks that are out there?
Biofuels, I'm not really sure. You need to go long agriculture, which we are. You know, I think fertilizer is a interesting space. And unfortunately, you need energy once again to extract or manufacture fertilizer. So at the end of the day, I think we're sitting with an energy problem globally.
We still haven't solved the issue that we're facing.
Just long ExxonMobil.
I think it's the easier yeah. option. They already got the pipes, right? And they already got the demand. And everyone's buying a new car, it feels like, even though they're complaining they can't afford cars. But anyways, and your thoughts into the biofuel problem, Devin?
Look, but I don't know specific companies. I do think the long the agricultural commodities is an interesting play. You know, the fertilizer sector, you can look at companies like Mosaic, which came out with results yeah. recently. They saw slightly softer demand, but yeah, a really high quality company there. In terms of hydrogen fuel cell, that has platinum elements in it. So, you know, could circle back to the question earlier about Anglo Platinum and possibly going to a platinum producer. PGM. But, yeah, to your point, Bart, we haven't fully solved this. I think lots of the big automobile manufacturers are experimenting with multiple technologies to see which ones will ultimately become sustainable and mainstream for them.
Okay, interesting. We've got a question here from Rob Guzman, who says, I'd like to ask your panel about the merits of investing in Intsimbi. I mean, we also had a conversation about this one prior. The last time I heard about Intsimbi was, about 10 years ago.
Same year. Last time I heard about Intsimbi was when it listed in the IPO boom in 2008. And I think just looking at the chart now, and as I remember correctly, it didn't even clear that 1 rand. Usually a microcap would list at 1 rand, you know, back then. But I think it was late to the party. So what you had in 2008 is late to the party when the IPO boom was basically falling apart. You would, you know, subscribe for 1 rand a share and open up for much less than 1 rand. I think Intsimbi was one of those. So to be quite honest, right, that's, I haven't got any insights there.
It's also into too hard part. I mean, if you listed at a buck and it's at 96 cents, that's one way to definitely not compound wealth. Devin, any thoughts?
No, I've got nothing to add to right first.
That's a very long time period. Wow, I mean, let me not double down on that one. We have a question here from on Twitter, which is asking about our thoughts on McDonald's before we go into our stock picks, Devin. So maybe McDonald's, you have some insights?
Yeah, so I mean, McDonald's results that came out were probably on the soft side. I think maybe, you know, people aren't quite getting back to those restaurants. I think they sold off their Russian businesses. I think China's probably not performing the way they would think. So, you know, memory serves correct, it's kind of single digit revenue growth, costs are starting to push a little higher there. So quite a difficult space to be in, also not the highest margin business. I think it's a kind of classic industrial stock, but probably not the right time in the cycle to be looking at.
Yeah, and price-wise, what do you think, Trickers here at McDonald's? Doesn't look cheap either.
No, I think there's a few other, let's call it defensives or food-based. Obviously, McDonald's is not really a restaurant group or a food producer, but I think there's other defensives that you can look at the moment. But McDonald's won't be, it's not on my buying list at the moment.
So not in your buying list at the moment. Interesting insights. Let's start with our stock picks while we still have time. Trickus, what are you going with this evening?
So, yeah, with a platinum group, producer, also produces chrome, obviously, it's Theresa Mining. Theresa Mining is also listed in London. If we just take spot prices, it's trading at a sub-5 price earnings ratio. So, obviously, not spot prices, spot PGM prices. And if I discount the chrome price by a lot, by about 30%, then we get to about a sub-5 price earnings ratio. I think it's a fairly good management team, and I think they're sitting with a lot of cash, or will be sitting with a lot of cash over the next 12 months. And it'll be interesting to see what they do with it. Quite a few of these smaller producers, locally and abroad, will be sitting with a lot of cash, over the next 12 months. Within metals and energy. So look out for those.
So maybe there will be some consolidation in that market. Let's see if they grow their small businesses into a diversified miner.
or share buybacks, hopefully, special dividends.
Yeah, because the price seems about right at these levels. Devin, your pick for the evening?
Yes, so Bryce, it's one that I've recommended previously in June. It is the iShares 20-year U.S. Treasury ETF, code TLT. And really the reason for that was just the absolute carnage in the U.S. bond market pre the Fed tightening. We saw an unprecedented sell-off in those bonds. Yields spiked, and it created a very unique opportunity to buy them at very undervalued levels. Those prices have moved up since June, but are still well below where kind of their normal levels should be. It's down about 20% year to date. And I think it has a fantastic total return potential and could even recover faster than equity. So still one on the cards. I would guess there was a question on how much, do we still hang into this? I would think normalizing is at least another 20% upside.
Okay, fantastic. You do have a lot of fans for that pick. So thank you very much, Devin, for that. Devin is picking TLT, which is the iShares 20-year bonds thingy. And Trickus is going with Teresa Mining. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Thanks to my guests, Devin Shute from the Robey Group and Trickus Kombrink from Capicraft. Stockwatch is back again tomorrow, same time, same place. Have a good evening. I'm gonna go to the next one.